Hey, our show means a lot to me, and I've had some amazing experiences doing the show. But what about you guys? Do you have a story about what our show means to you?
If you do, you can email memberstories@maximumfun.org or call 323-601-8719 to share with us.
And we may feature it in an upcoming episode.
It's Max Fun Drive story request time, and we want to hear from you.
A real know-it-all? Do you annoy your family by shouting the answers while watching Jeopardy? Do you drive people crazy when you start a sentence with, "Well, actually"? Well, guess what? You can go fact yourself. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Go Fact Yourself, the show where we take the smartest people we know and make them look dumb. And then smart again. I'm Helen Hong. And now, socially distancing from our homes in Los Angeles, here's our moderator, J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen Hong. Great to see you.
Nice to see you.
Well, I have a little update since our last show.
Ooh, okay.
As I mentioned, I was running for office for my local neighborhood council.
Right.
Now, here's what's interesting. As we're recording the show, it is before the election, but by the time this show drops, it will have been after the election. So let's record a couple of variations.
Okay.
So, Helen, I lost the election.
Ugh. Keith, I'm so sorry to hear that. I mean, you gave it your best shot, and hey, this may not be the end of your career. You might have another election in your future.
Oh, well, thank you, Helen. That's very nice of you to say. Helen, I won the election.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. You're going to be like an all-powerful millionaire.
That's exactly what you get when you're on your volunteer position on the neighborhood council.
Right. You get all the power and all the money.
Thank you, Helen. Wow, what an actor you are. I thought I knew, but now I really know. Today on Go Fact Yourself, two guests will compete to answer questions about facts they know, facts they might not know, and frankly, facts they should know. Plus, we'll meet actual experts on two very different topics. And finally, we'll declare one of our guests the winner of today's show. Let's get started and meet today's guests. Helen, who is up first?
He is a sportscaster who can be heard on ESPN and as the play-by-play announcer for the Chicago White Sox. It's Jason Benetti.
Hello, Jason Benetti.
Hi, Jay, Keith, and Helen. How are you?
Very well. So nice of you to join us. And actually, I should say, so nice of you to join us again. You were an expert on the White Sox in our previous episode with Jimmy Pardo.
I'm previously an expert, so now I get to be bad at everything this time.
Life is a rainbow of knowledge and different experiences, isn't it? In addition to broadcasting baseball, you've also broadcasted football, basketball, lacrosse. Do you have a favorite sport to announce? Is it baseball?
Baseball, because I get to do it most, but my favorite bizarre sport I've called is the National Electricians Championship.
Really?
What? What does that entail?
Well, I thought it entailed a lot of puns about sparks flying, but they told me not to do that. So it entailed...
Aww.
Yeah, it was great fun. It was great fun. I learned a lot about junction boxes.
Wow. That's why you get into sports announcing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the glamour.
Your sort of specialty as an announcer, and I think one of the things that's endeared you to a younger generation of announcers is that you integrate advanced statistics into your broadcast, and you kind of don't rely on sort of the old narratives. You really deal with sort of the facts and the numbers. As part of that, you've done shows that are affectionately referred to as nerdcasts. Tell the listeners what a nerdcast is.
Well, we gather a bunch of intellectually curious people, and we try to transform what baseball looks like on television. They're powered by StatCast, which is proprietary MLB stuff that they do in-house that helps everybody understand sort of the underpinnings of baseball, why people do things instead of just what the batting average is. So we try to tell stories with numbers as much as we possibly can. And I say we, but frankly, the driving force is the rest of the crew, including our StatCast pal, Mike Petriello, who you need to meet one day.
Oh, I'd love to. I was interested in learning that the job of announcing for the White Sox is an actual job that you specified that you wanted as a kid. Like, you didn't just want to be a broadcaster or work in sports. You literally wrote a paper that said you wanted to be the White Sox broadcaster?
So paper is a bit of a reach. It was like third grade, and it was in very large cursive. And I actually don't know if my mom has 20 other papers that said I wanted to be like a cowboy doctor or an astronaut or something like that. So, no, but I did specifically say I wanted to follow Hawk Harrelson into the White Sox chair.
And oh my God, that's so cool. I love that. Do you still have that paper?
It is in my mom's file cabinet for B for blackmail.
Okay.
I think you got to get that paper and frame it and put it on your wall and just remind yourself every day, like if you're having a hard day or like a day that you're annoyed with your job, just look at it and go, wow, this is like my version of an astronaut that I wanted to do since I was a kid and I made it happen.
It is actually amazing to be here today because hearing about that again, I know it exists. But sometimes, you know, 162 games of a season or whatever happens in, you know, hypothetically a pandemic or something like that.
Right? Oh, yes.
Hypothetically. It sort of chisels away at that. But you all just reminded me of that and put a smile on my face. So thanks.
Oh, wow. Good job, me and Helen. This, of course, was an unusual year for sports and for baseball. Games were played in literally empty stadiums with no fans. How did that change how you called games this year?
You know, it was really interesting. We had the first pandemic no-hitter with nobody there. But our TV crew is so exceptional at details that we had so many shots of our pitcher, Lucas Giolito, him sort of like nervous energying his way into the ninth inning and crushing a Red Bull and like whatever he was doing. I paid much more attention to the specific emotions of the players this year. And I actually think it made for a more robust experience of baseball. Not that I would eliminate fans from the whole enterprise, but I think I'll take that into the next season with fans for sure.
I heard that for us watching at home, they are piping in sort of crowd noise, right? But for you being there, you got nothing to work on. So are you imagining crowd noise? Like, are you, like, how are you? Because it would be like, oh my God, then the crowd goes wild. And you're like, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, this is a poetry slam. No, the good news was by a couple games into the season, they were piping in some of that into the stadium for the player because the players had asked for it.
Oh, right. Interesting.
In terms of just where it was for me and for everybody else, I think once you lock in on the emotion of the moment, like we could hear each other's dugouts screaming at each other. So you could kind of get the feel of the angst and the building emotion of the game from what they were saying to each other.
Yeah, it was a great season if you liked hearing players swear. Probably the best ever.
By mid-season, I was coming up with different ways to say that word. Like, I was like, oh, he's a big hockey fan. Or, oh, he's really into A Midsummer Night's Dream or something like that. You know, like that was part That's of right. the fun for me.
He's saying puck. Yeah. He's saying puck, yeah. Of course. Yeah. Last thing I want to ask you about is you've done some work with a charity to make this wonderful animated series called Awkward Moments. Tell us about that and what your motivation was for that.
Yeah. So I navigate the world with a walk that's not your quote unquote normal walk. Somebody who deals with cerebral palsy, but not in nearly as aggressive of a way as other people have to deal with it. One of the head people at this Cerebral Palsy Foundation, Richard Ellenson, we combined to make this cartoon series that sort of examines the weird reactions I get and people like me get out in the wild. There's one where I'm sort of bobbing in and out of precious artifacts at a museum. And the security guard at the museum is getting more and more concerned as I draw closer to a vase or something. There's a lot of woe that comes with disability, and there's a lot of judgment, if we're going to be honest, the way people handle somebody who looks different in this world. And I don't want to minimize that at all, but I also know that the reactions I get from people are fairly repetitive. And I think shining a light on that, especially when they don't mean anything by it, right? It's subconscious.
Yeah, I think that's what I like about so much about the episodes I've watched is that you really, even people who are well-meaning can still mess up. And I think you end up having compassion for them as they have this sort of misplaced compassion for you.
Yeah, it's not even a mistake. It's like the way our brains work, right? Like we need a schema for like exit sign is green on highway. Like guy walks up to me with limp. I want to help that person. That's not a faulty assumption, really. I just think that when we start to encounter more people with disabilities, we realize that help isn't necessarily the first thing that those people want. They just want empathy and understanding more than like, can I carry your bag?
Wow. That's really cool. I really recommend people check that out. It's called Awkward Moments. You can find it on YouTube. I'm so happy that you joined us for what I'm sure are going to include many awkward moments, but in a very different way. Thanks for being here, Jason Vannetti.
Thank you.
Helen, against whom will Jason be competing?
She is an Emmy-winning writer, comedian, and producer who is the creator and executive producer of Dead to Me on Netflix. It's Liz Feldman.
Hi, Liz Feldman.
Hi. It's so nice to be here.
It's so nice to see you. I've known you for a while. Oh, I haven't seen you for a while, but we met doing improv back in the day.
We did. It could be almost 20 years by now.
It could.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm still waiting for my yes and.
Oh, well, yes and, it's great to see you too.
Oh, yay, we did it.
Yeah.
In addition to Dead to Me, you've also, of course, worked on sitcoms like Two Broke Girls, talk shows like Ellen, for which you won a couple Emmys, and award shows. And I think the last time I remember seeing you on TV before the success of Dead to Me and those interviews was actually on an Oscar telecast with Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, that's correct. I believe he was wearing just underwear.
I believe so as well, right?
Okay, yeah. Yes. Yeah, it was a bit for the Oscars when Neil Patrick Harris was hosting. I was one of the writers. Yes, I made my auspicious Oscars debut in the background, acting very horrified to see his very lovely physique.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. It was a really funny moment. I think it was sort of a nod to Birdman, where that scene.
Yes, that's right.
Walk outside as well.
That's right.
Dead to Me is so great, and you come from an improv background, as we said, and it was sort of an improvised idea. Can you tell us that story for the millionth time?
Yes, that is true. Improv has saved my life so many times, and has made my life so many times. I had been set up for a pitch meeting where I was told I don't need to have any ideas. Right, I'm just going to go in. And I'm going to sit with these producers and they're going to pitch me a couple of things. And if something, you know, kind of sparks my interest, we'll see where it goes from there.
Those are always such lies, aren't they? Such like lying liars who lie. You just go in and be yourself.
Yeah, just go
liars.
There.
Liars.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I show up. I have a 5 p.m. appointment. And I walk into this conference room where it's clear people have been cycling in and out of all day. You know, there's like the fruit plate only has honeydew left. You know, there's no good LaCroix flavors. Like it's like a coconut and like a raspberry lime.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize it was that bad. Oh, wow.
It was that bad. And so I sat down and the first thing they said is, we're sick of our ideas. Do you have any? And I swear I had nothing, like, not in the way that you usually have something in your back pocket and then you go, you would pretend like you don't really have something. And then I really had nothing. And I was like in sort of a dark time of my life. I had just turned 40. My cousin sort of very sadly passed away on my 40th birthday. Maybe 10 days later. I just weirdly came up with this idea, like from the ether. I was sort of stalling and asking them questions. And I thought, well, I don't know. It's two women and one of them's a widow and they meet the other one at a grief support group, only her guy didn't die. He just broke up with her. And that is where Dead to Me was born.
Wow.
Out of complete desperation.
Wow. Just imagine if there had been good LaCroix there.
Exactly.
You would have an amazingly successful Netflix series.
If I had been sipping on a pamplemousse, we don't know what would have happened.
Who knows? Television history could have been changed forever.
Interesting, you know, sort of little factoid. Those producers eventually passed on the idea.
What?
Yeah. So,
you know what they're doing right now? They're eating honeydew and bad, bad LaCroix.
I wish them all the best. They were lovely people.
Okay. You've referred to Dead to Me as a traumedy, kind of half trauma, half comedy. Is it a conscious choice to balance those things or is it just something that comes out?
I was aiming to make a show that was reflective of the way that I look at life, which is, you know, that as somebody who comes from a comedy background with a capital C, I just was interested in, like, you know, diversifying a little bit and exploring what it might be like to tell a very sad story through a comic lens, you know? And so I just wanted to watch a show that felt more balanced, you know? Any day can start off like the worst day of your life until, you know, something hilarious happens and you're in a fit of laughter with your best friend and everything's going to be okay.
Well, speaking of best friends, Christina Applegate and Linda Cardellini are so great, have such great chemistry. Had they worked together before? Was this the first time they had done something like this?
They had never met.
Wow.
Yeah. I knew Christina a little bit. We were developing another idea together that eventually we sort of moved off of. So when we first cast Christina, we were looking for somebody who would be a great counterpart for her. I had never met Linda, but I was a huge fan of hers from Bloodline, actually. Mm. And the first day we all met, which was like over lunch, as soon as they sat down together, honestly, within like 5 minutes. It was like they had known each other for a very long time. They were immediately just locked in. And I think that also just, you know, shows you how talented they are, that like they can just immediately assume this intimacy together that it feels, you know, so real because it actually is real. They really do love each other.
So you're gearing up to make season three. It's going to be the final season. How come only three seasons?
About halfway through shooting season two, and this was pre-pandemic, an idea kind of came to me, kind of from the ether, the way that the original premise came to me, about how to end the series. And I realized that the way to do it was launching off of the end of the second season. You know, I just felt like it was a three-season show. I thought of a way to end it, and I just wanted to go for it. So
I really appreciate that, because there's so many moments in the show where you realize, like, oh my god, if this one character finds out this other thing, the jig is up, everything's over. And like, I think imagining dragging that out for longer than that season, it starts maybe, I would wonder if maybe it started to feel like not as realistic.
Exactly. You want to keep it grounded, but yeah, everything around them is so heightened. So you just have to, you know, find that balance. And I think for us, it's going to be three seasons.
Well, three seasons of excellence. We certainly appreciate the show and your work, and we certainly appreciate your joining us. Liz Feldman, everybody. Liz and Jason, we asked each of you to provide us with a few topics outside your field of work in which you feel you have some expertise. Jason, you said you know a lot about the book Infinite Jest, the TV show Survivor, and the movie Best in Show. Book, TV show, movie. That's what we love to see. Whereas Liz, you said you know a lot about the current LA Dodgers. Liz is wearing an LA Dodgers cap for our listeners at home. NBC sitcoms of the 1980s. And I can't believe this topic has never come up on the show. Famous lesbians. Later on, we're going to ask each of you some in-depth trivia questions about one of those topics. But first, we're going to get your thoughts on something you might know nothing about. It's time to split some hairs with our What's the Difference round. We'll have one question for each of you, which worth up to 2 points. If either of you gives an incorrect answer, the other person has a chance to steal. Your topic today, I have reservations. Up first, Jason. Jason, your question comes from a listener. Who is it, Helen?
It's from Tracy Ishitoya of Tokyo, Japan.
What?
Wow! International. Listeners, if you would like to submit a suggestion for our What's the Difference round, go to gofactyourpod.com and click on Get Involved.
All right. Thank you, Helen, and thank you, Tracy. Jason, in the topic of I have reservations, they both might get you in the door, but what is the difference between a reservation and an appointment? A reservation and an appointment.
I have a feeling it has something to do with how locked in the time frame is. If you're late, you get to say, hey, I'm 15 minutes late. I still should get the opportunity to do this.
Okay.
But I am going to switch that thought and say a reservation is for a place. An appointment is with a person.
Okay. Wow. Big roller coaster of intellectual information ending with that. Okay, we have Jason's answer. We don't know yet if he is correct. Liz, what do you think?
I think he's probably right, but I was going to say a reservation comes with a caveat that you can easily cancel or change it. An appointment is more fixed.
Oh, okay. Very good. Well, I'm starting to have reservations about this segment, and I'm getting disappointed. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
Here are the facts. It's all about whom you are seeing. You make a reservation for an activity or an event, like travel or entertaining or dining. You make an appointment with a professional person, like a doctor or hairstylist or a personal trainer.
That's right. Now, I used to make appointments with personal trainers until I realized I was paying someone money while I stayed home and slept. Helen, how did they do in that round?
I think that Jason got both of those right, because Jason said place versus person.
Very good, Jason. 2 points for Jason. Up next in I Have Reservations, Liz. Liz, they both describe someone who does not speak up to make an appointment or reservation, but what is the difference between someone who is reserved and someone who is shy? Someone who is reserved and someone who is shy.
I think someone who is shy is someone who is inherently in their personality or in their sort of emotional makeup, an introvert or just a less socially confident person. Whereas somebody who is reserved may not be shy, but they may be someone who is a bit more conservative in the way that they approach other people or
Okay, I'm glad you added that. All right, we have Liz's answer. We don't know yet if she is correct. Jason, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I would say, and this may be very much like Liz's, but I think somebody who is reserved intentionally holds back their emotional thoughts or may not ever know how to share them. Somebody who's shy is circumstantially doing that.
All right, we need to shy away from this segment. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
Here are the facts. Both describe people who are quiet, but a shy person might want to speak up, but just can't bring themselves to. They keep things to themselves because they're afraid, and it can even be painful for them to interact with others. A reserved person can speak up, but doesn't, either because they decide not to or because they're just the strong, silent type. Even though they keep things to themselves, they still might enjoy interacting with others just quietly.
That's right. And some people are naturally reserved without being timid or nervous. And some people are neither reserved nor shy. And we call those people podcasters. Helen, how did our guests do in that round?
You know, I kind of want to give 1 point each.
Okay.
Because Liz, you did say shy is someone who's inherently introverted and less confident.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jason, you said reserved is someone who intentionally holds back. So I kind of see 1 point each there.
All right, very good. So what is our score at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, Jason Benetti has 3 points and Liz Feldman has 1 point.
Those scores are bound to change as we move on to questions about topics our guests have chosen for themselves. That's all up ahead when we come back on Go Fact Yourself. Hey, everybody, if you've been trying to cut down on carbs or sugar or unhealthy food like I have been, you might think that you can't eat any of the good stuff anymore. Well, great news. There is some good stuff. In fact, there's great stuff, and it is called Magic Spoon. It's a cereal, and it's reminiscent of all those sugary cereals you used to have as a kid. But guess what? There's no sugar. Wait, Helen, is that right? There's no sugar?
Yeah, Magic Spoon has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs, and only 140 calories in each serving.
And I have to say, my girlfriend is a personal trainer and knows a lot about nutrition. She could not believe when I told her that it had that much protein. Apparently, that is a lot of protein for a cereal. So you've also got the endorsement of my girlfriend. Congratulations.
It's also keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free.
It's also delicious. I legitimately love it. I cannot wait to get more. I raced through the 4 boxes that they sent me, and I have a feeling that you will too. The flavors are so great, but they also have limited edition flavors. Helen, what do they have now?
Right now, there's cookies and cream and maple waffle. Yummy.
Yum.
Or you can build your own box with cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, and cinnamon.
All you have to do is go to magicspoon.com/gofact to grab that new limited edition cookies and cream maple waffle or a custom bundle of cereal to try it today. And be sure to use our promo code
GOFACT
at checkout to save $5 off of your order. That's magicspoon.com/gofact. And use the code
GOFACT
to save $5.
Thank you, Magic Spoon.
Ooh, we made a jingle.
Hey, folks, it's me, James Arthur M., host of Minority Corner, your home through these wild times for weekly doses of pop culture, history, news, nerdy stuff, and more through a BIPOC queer and allied lens. That's how you get Joel Schumacher putting nipples on Batman.
Yeah.
I didn't ask, I say this as a gay man, didn't ask for it. I don't need to see Batman's nipples on his suit. Who is this for?
I did a bunch of research. I wanted to just know about the history of Black people in Argentina. So not only did they erase Black people from their history, they also started to flip and use it as slurs.
We're not done. Like, we're not done with the work that needs to be done. And so stay awake. So join me and some of your new BFFs every Friday here on Maximum Fun to stay informed, empowered, and have some fun. Minority Corner, because together we're the majority.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself, where our score is Jason Benetti with 3 points and Liz Feldman with 1 point. Once again, here's Jakey Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. All right, Jason, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about the book Infinite Jest, the TV show Survivor, and the movie Best in Show. Let's find out a little bit more about each of those. First of all, tell us why you chose the book Infinite Jest.
So I interned for this talk radio host in Chicago back in like 2002, and he's like the smartest person I ever encountered. And he'd come in and he'd do the New York Times crossword puzzle like immediately, like 5 minutes, bang, gone. And I've always sort of revered his intellect, and he told me to read Infinite Jest, which is a charcoal briquette of a book. It's the vocabulary, like David Foster Wallace's ability to use language to convey so many different types of people. and so empathetically. Some of the descriptions he has in that book are just so beautiful.
Well, speaking of beautiful, tell us why you chose the TV show Survivor.
You cannot go anywhere else for interpersonal strategy that is top level. I love the show for the cultural dynamic and the group dynamic and the group think and all that goes along with it and the strategy. I'm a tactical Survivor fan. I'm like the person who watches NASCAR for the pit stop strategy instead of the crashes.
All right, well, let's see if that kind of strategy pays off in this show. Finally, you said you know a lot about the movie Best in Show.
So Fred Willard, rest his soul, the character he plays in that movie is one of the most hilarious characters I have ever seen. I mean, it's sad to say in some countries these dogs are eaten. Like, it just came out of nowhere.
So funny.
It's not that I aspire to be Fred Willard, because you don't want to be that person when you're doing an event as a sportscaster. But his wit and his just immediate reaction to things is so top-notch. I could watch that movie over and over again and have.
All right, well, to summarize, Jason, you said you know a lot about the book Infinite Jest, the TV show Survivor, and the movie Best in Show. Today we're going to quiz you about Best in Show.
Yay!
Oh, thank God.
Liz is very relieved, maybe even more than Jason.
That's the only one I stand a chance with of those three.
All right, well, let's see if Jason gives you a chance to steal. Jason, have you ever had a chance to broadcast a dog show, or would you if given the opportunity?
I have not, but one of my professors in college at Syracuse was for many years the voice of the dog show on ESPN.
Oh, wow.
No. Oh, that's very cool.
And are you a dog lover yourself?
I have no pets. I travel too much. Mm-hmm. I would be the worst dog dad in human history. Well, maybe other than the guy with the busy bee in Best in Show.
All right. Well, just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in the topic with our three-part question. But before that, to give you a chance to show off, here are five trivia questions about your topic, each worth 1 point. If you want it, you're allowed a total of 2 hints for these 5 questions. Now, Liz, do listen closely, because you can steal if Jason gets any wrong. Liz, by the way, how much do you know about Best in Show?
Well, as I was saying earlier, it's the only one I know anything about of Infinite Jest. I've already forgotten the other category, okay, because I blocked it out. But I am a huge Christopher Guest fan. I would definitely do better with Waiting for Guffman, but Best in Show, I at least stand a chance. I've seen it multiple times.
Okay, well, let's see if Jason gives you that chance. Here's your first question, Jason Benetti. Jason, the show in Best in Show is called the Mayflower Kennel Club Dog Show. That's a fictional show, but what real-life dog show, which began awarding dogs in 1877 and is now broadcast by Fox Sports, is Mayflower partially based on?
I would call it the Imes Yuganuba American Kennel Club Dog Show.
Helen?
That is not correct.
No, I'm terribly sorry. Liz, with a chance to steal.
I think it's just the American Kennel Club.
Helen?
That is not correct either.
No, I'm sorry. We were looking for Westminster, the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show. I'm sorry about that. By the way, 7 different dogs have won the Westminster more than once. The most recent time was about 50 years ago when an English Springer Spaniel won back-to-back in 1971 to 1972. All right, no point there for Jason, but no steal for Liz, so we're back to it. Here's question number 2. Jason, the movie is largely improvised, but 2 people are credited with its screenplay. One is director Christopher Guest. The other plays someone married to Catherine O'Hara's character. Who is it?
The name of the actor, you're saying?
Yes.
Eugene Levy.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. You're on the board with a point. Fun fact, Eugene Levy, of course, recently won an Emmy for also playing someone married to a Catherine O'Hara character on the TV show Schitt's Creek. All right, here's question number 3. Played by director Christopher Guest, the character Harlan Pepper isn't just interested in dogs. According to him, he used to drive his mother crazy by being able to name every what that there was.
Oh, white macadamia, they're nuts. They're nuts.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. Nuts indeed.
Yes.
One of the best scenes in the whole movie.
Him, yes.
He said that's the one that would drive her crazy when Huber would start to say.
Please continue to quote as much of the movie as possible. It is delightful. Here's question number 4. Jason, the movie is called Best in Show, and spoiler alert, who wins Best in Show?
It's Winky, the dog of Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. It is Winky, the Norwich Terrier. Fun fact, Best in Show was released in the year 2000. The winner of the Westminster Show in 1998 was a Norwich Terrier. All right, Jason, here is question number 5. I have a feeling you're going to enjoy this one. One of the reasons Best in Show became an instant comedy classic is the work of that comedy classic himself, the late Fred Willard, as announcer Buck Laughlin. Finish this line that Fred probably improvised while announcing the dog show. I went to one of those obedience places once. It was all going well until they...
Oh, my goodness. I don't know if I have the right verb.
Okay.
But it's like put hot candle wax on my private parts.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. And almost letter perfect, spilled hot candle wax on my private parts. Very, very nice pull, Jason. By the way, you can hear Fred Willard as a guest on episode 13 of Go Fact Yourself. And boy, do we miss him.
Yeah, he was really wonderful. And he was so charming and kind. And his wit really came through when he was on our show.
Yep. You can imagine how lucky we felt to have known him. Yes, Liz, you want to say?
People who have worked with him say he's the single greatest improviser who's ever lived.
Wow. And he shows it. It's so great that movie was able to document that element of it.
Mm. Absolutely brilliant.
All right, Jason, you did quite well in that round. But now here is your expert level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. Jason, one of the dogs profiled is named Beatrice, who is owned by Meg and Hamilton Swan. Meg and Hamilton have an unusual approach for preparing Beatrice for competitions, including taking her to a therapist after the dog saw them have relations. For up to 3 points, what kind of dog is Beatrice, and who played Meg and Hamilton Swan?
Okay, so I believe Beatrice is a Weimaraner. Parker Posey is Meg. And then, Hamilton, the guy's name is just escaping me. I just read the darn Ringer story about the oral history, and his name was in there. It's a 3-word name. I think he goes by his middle name, and I just can't think of it.
Can't think of it. Okay, just want to say the name of somebody else in the film, or just name of a friend that you want to mention?
Ed Begley.
Ed Begley. All right. By the way, I should point out that Liz is jumping up and down because I believe she knows the name, but please do not say it, Liz, because Helen is taking note of Jason's answers, but we have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, to Jason's surprise and chagrin, who do we have today?
He is an actor, writer, and producer who's appeared in all of Christopher Guest's improvised movies, including Best in Show. It's Michael Hitchcock.
Woo!
Hello, Michael Hitchcock.
Hi. How are you?
Very well. Hi. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my gosh. It's really
save some remorse here for myself and say I absolutely love your work and I'm so disappointed in myself. I think I may fling myself out the window.
Right? No, don't do it.
I'm also disappointed because I knew that answer and I know mine.
Yeah, tell us about how you and Liz know each other, Michael.
We know each other from improvising as well, so it's fantastic.
And you and I know each other from improvising as well. In fact, I was realizing this morning, I think I've known you since I was 16 years old.
Wow.
And I was like 12. That's so weird.
Yeah, that is weird that we've aged on such different trajectories since then.
We were in class together, and they let me in early.
Yeah. And you were such a bad boy.
I was.
Michael, I don't know you at all, but I am a huge fan of your work.
Helen.
And I'm so excited that you're here, because here you are. It's
me.
And Michael, you actually have a little bit of a connection to Jason's place of employ. You're from Chicago and you actually worked at WGN for a while?
I worked at Jason's competitor. I was an intern at WGN and I helped with the Cubs one summer.
What did you do with the Cubs?
I helped do stats with Jack Brickhouse, weirdly. And I'd have to get the players from the clubhouse for the leadoff man before the show started.
No way. I do White Sox with Steve Stone and he hosted the leadoff man for so many years. That's amazing.
Yeah, I did it with Lou Boudreau, who yelled at me in front of the entire stadium because I went to get a player. I think it was Dave Kingman, and they weren't ready. They were still getting dressed, and all the players would squirt me with squirt guns. So we came out late, and the show had already started, and I had Lou Boudreau's script, and he was so angry. After the show was over, he screamed at me in front of the entire stadium.
What I remember most about the leadoff man was that guests on the leadoff man were given a Zenith clock radio, which was funny because, A, like, you think if you're a professional baseball player, by then you have an alarm clock to wake up to, but also that they would have the same players on multiple times. How many clock radios did Dave Kingman or Leon Durham need?
Well, I also did Bozo.
Did you really?
Did you really?
Yeah, we'd even do like the cue cards for the commercials that they shot at WGN, which were like the Ford commercials and everything. Mm-hmm. So they put the cars on that spinner thing. And many times the cars didn't start after they finished the commercial, because they were used cars.
Oh, man. Well, of course, people recognize you from the Christopher Guest films, some of your other acting work that people will know more recently. You've been on Space Force on Netflix. And, of course, Black Monday on Showtime, which just got renewed. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You did a movie that should have been released around now that hopefully we'll get to see another time.
Yes, I did a movie called Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. It's starring Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo, who also wrote it. You know them from writing Bridesmaids together. Mm-hmm. And the movie is a cross between like Bridesmaids and Austin Powers. And it was supposed to be released in July, and it will be coming sometime whenever Lionsgate feels it should be released, either through streaming or maybe in the theaters if we're lucky at some point.
I can't wait to see that movie. I'm so excited. Kristen and Annie and I were all in Sunday Company at the Groundlings together, which is where I met Mike.
Oh, that's right. Wow. It's so great. I love them so much. It was really fun.
Let's talk about these Christopher Guest movies. You've been in all of his improvised films. How did you first connect with Christopher Guest?
Well, weirdly, he saw me at the Groundlings. He saw me improvising. saw me improvising at a Thursday show, and I didn't know he was there, so I wasn't nervous. And I got to go in and meet him and interview with him. And he's very quiet in person. It didn't go particularly great or bad. I just thought, he's very quiet. And I did a lot of community theater as a kid. Mm-hmm. So I talked about that and many of the people that were in it. And I guess he liked me because I ended up in Waiting for Guffman. So
yeah. Well, and your role in Waiting for Guffman, the scenes that you have, just these wonderful moments of you gushing about how great Corky is, I just think are some of the greatest moments
so funny.
Of that incredible comedy. So, of course, those movies are mostly improvised, but there are scripts. What does a script for one of his movies look like?
Well, they're not so much scripts as they are outlines. Mm-hmm. It will say whatever, like Meg and Hamilton are going to visit the psychiatrist about their dog. Mm-hmm. And that will kind of be it.
Wow.
It's maybe just one or two lines. And you make up all the dialogue. Then again, like on something like Waiting for Guffman, the whole play is written out ahead of time. The music is written out ahead of time.
Wait, so that scene in the therapy office, like, was it established that you and she had that the dog had seen you have relations, quote unquote?
Yes,
that was established.
That was okay. That was part of it.
I was gonna say if that was improvised, like my mind is freaking blown.
Well, they shoot so much footage. Did you know in Best in Show that your role was going to be as large as it ended up being?
Probably not. I mean, you know. You're one of the main people. Mm-hmm. We knew ahead of time that our dog wouldn't win because it freaks out and all of that business. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the look that your character had. Where did the idea of the braces come from? And I know that there's an interesting inspiration for the haircut that you had as well.
The braces came from, that was Christopher Guest's idea when we met him. Parker and I met him a couple months before we started filming because we also had to train our dogs. We had to learn how to do, what we had to do. Oh yeah, we had lessons and the whole thing. And John Michael Higgins, who you thought I was.
So wait. Hold, please. I had just read the Ringer story, the oral history. I was conflating names, and I will probably not get over this for the rest of my life.
We get mixed up on a daily basis, so that's, you're forgiven. Don't even worry about it. The braces was Christopher's idea. I had retainers. I had like fake ones that I have in my bathroom drawer. I still have them. Parker got real ones because she wanted to fix a thing, like a little crooked tooth during the time we were filming. But we went to the same orthodontist, so he made both sets. And then my haircut was, which is really cool about those movies, is we get to go to every department and help decide what we're going to be doing. I went to the hair department and said, I want my character thinks he looks like Matthew Perry. And we copied Matthew Perry's haircut from Friends.
No. That's perfect.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, once you know that, you cannot unsee it. It looks, it's amazing that people didn't notice that before once you find that out.
Well, I don't look anything like him. So it's just very weird. But it was like we dyed it the same color. It's the same cut. It's very strange with those movies. Like just things no one knows about.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
And you were shooting it, even though you guys were playing dog owners and had gone through training to know how to behave like dog owners. But a lot of the background people were actual dog owners and people who competed in these shows. What did they think about what was happening in front of them?
Well, they, yeah, all the dogs were professional, you know, dogs that do dog shows. I shouldn't say professional, but they were all competitive dog people.
Did the owners realize that you were kind of poking fun at them?
Well, here's where the problem became. We weren't really poking fun at them. Our characters were not nice people. But unfortunately, the first scene that we shot with the dog owners and those dogs was when I'm screaming at Carter and screaming in the dog's face. And so we had to go around and go like, hey, my name's Michael and da-da-da. We're not really making fun of dogs. And our characters are the bad people and we lose. Because they were afraid for a moment that, you know, everyone might walk.
Mm, I know that feeling on this show sometimes.
Yeah, after seeing the footage, and I am screaming quite loud in the dog's face, and I didn't realize at the time I was quite that close.
How was the dog? How was the dog with you?
Yeah, how was the dog at improv, especially?
The dog's real name, by the way, is Peaches. Peaches was a movie dog, so it had a trainer that. You know, because none of the owners of show dogs wanted their dogs to learn bad behavior. Because Peaches or, you know, and the Beatrice had to jump up on me. The show dog people don't want that happening. Right.
They wouldn't even risk it once.
Right.
Wow.
We had a movie dog, Peaches, that had been in competitive shows before. So it knew how to do walks.
Wow.
And oddly, Liz, I'm sure you've worked with dogs on the things too. Like, they're not that friendly because they can't be. They're service dogs, basically. Yeah. They obey their owner.
They're very focused on that one thing.
Yeah. Huh? It's not that they're not nice dogs. I'm sure they're perfectly nice to the owner, but they're so focused.
Yeah.
And backstage, I think I mentioned in the Ringer article, I thought it was going to sound like just like a kennel when you go into those rooms. None of the dogs barked. They're so focused on just the task at hand that they were super well behaved.
All right, well, let's get to the reason we brought you here, Michael, as far as our game is concerned. You heard the question that we asked of Jason. First, we wanted to know, when it came to Meg and Hamilton Swan and their dog, Beatrice, what kind of dog is Beatrice? Helen, what did Jason say?
Jason said Weimaraner.
And Michael?
He's absolutely 100% correct.
Weimaraner is correct. I understand originally it was a different kind of dog, though.
It was, because the original dog was a show dog and they didn't want that dog to do bad behavior.
All right, great. There's a point for Jason. Next, we want to know who played Meg Swan. Helen, what did Jason say?
Jason said Parker Posey.
And Michael Hitchcock?
That's absolutely right, Jason.
Very good.
I bet you're going to get all three of them right.
Can I be very clear that this slow build to the embarrassing culmination yet again is truly a remarkable reason to come back on the podcast if I were ever asked?
Well, thank you. Yes, we build to the drama. It's like the bottom of the ninth over here in the no-hitter.
Yeah, it feels like it.
Yeah, you don't want to be superstitious. You know, you don't want to mention that it's happening. You want people to be surprised.
Would hate to do that.
Absolutely. And then finally, Helen, we asked Jason who played Hamilton Swan. Helen, what did Jason say?
Jason said Ed Begley.
And Michael Hitchcock, the tension is killing us. Is he right?
No, the person who played him was that guy.
Otherwise known as?
Michael Hitchcock.
Michael Hitchcock, it was you. Well, Mike, you've been a great sport about it. Jason, you've been a great sport about it. Before we let Michael go, Jason, is there anything you'd like to ask or say to our expert?
I have two things that I'd like to say. First of all, our sideline reporter for the White Sox last year went down to interview a guy who had become a sensation because he had mustard on his face the year prior. So it was like a viral internet sensation. And the guy saying to our sideline reporter to like send it back up to the booth, he said, say hi to Steve and the other guy. So I know exactly how this feels, but I do want to say, no joke, I'm a sports announcer, but what we do on a daily basis with a game and a baseball situation is very much informed by everything you and that cast did for me on Best in Show and Guffman and Mighty Wind and all of them. So I really do owe you a debt of gratitude for the amount of like mental acuity I try to have and understanding of how to be quick around people. Like, you are the gold standard. And I thank you so much for doing what you've done, because you've actually informed my career much more than people know.
Oh, thank you. Well,
that's
so nice. I have a quick story about Fred Willard, since you mentioned him.
Sure, very quick.
Which is, it's people know this, I think, but it's well worth repeating. Christopher Guest told Fred Willard to do, learn absolutely nothing about dogs and told Jim Pittick, who was the other announcer, to learn everything he could.
That's amazing.
And Fred Willard's character was based on Joe Gargiola.
Yes.
Because I think he originally did a dog show where he was less factual than he probably should have been.
And of course, Joe Gargiola was a baseball announcer. So Jason, this might be a path for you.
Yeah.
I do tend to be less tactful than expected.
Michael, it's so great that you could join us. If people want to find out more about you and your work, where can they go?
Oh, they can go to Instagram at HitchMichael, H-I-T-C-H, Michael. You can find me there, or I have a website, michaelhitchcock.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you again so much for joining us. It was wonderful to see you again. Michael Hitchcock,
everybody. Yay!
Thank you, Michael.
Bye-bye.
All right, Helen, what is our score at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, Jason Benetti has 9 points, and Liz Feldman has 1 point with a round of questions for Liz coming up.
That's right. We're going to talk with Liz about a topic she knows about. Plus, later, Liz and Jason will go head-to-head in our Fast Facts round. That's all to find a winner on Go Fact Yourself. Hey, everybody, it's Jake Heath here, and I'm thrilled to tell you that this week's episode is sponsored in part by Funny on Purpose, the funniest online comedy game show benefiting the cancer support community, streaming bi-monthly on Zoom and Facebook on a device near you during quarantine. Yes, that just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? Hey, Funny on Purpose is a game show, and it has been happening for, I would say, the last 6 or 8 months or so, and it is really, really fun. And guess what? It's hosted by me. That's right. And it features two teams of funny people playing all sorts of your favorite games. They've had folks on there like Rainn Wilson, Jonah Ray, Alonzo Bowden, Julia Sweeney, Paula Poundstone, Dwayne Perkins, Mindy Sterling, Tim Bagley, the fabulous Laganja Estranja. All those folks have been players. And the next show streams on April 1st, April Fool's Day, with my good pal Ophira Eisenberg of NPR's Ask Me Another on the show. Also scheduled to appear, former Go Fact Yourself guest Lorraine Newman and the great Mindy Sterling. The show is free to watch, but it's a fundraiser. So you watch, you have fun, then you just want to donate a little something to this great nonprofit. We all know the COVID experience has been tough on all of us, but imagine going through COVID and quarantine while struggling emotionally and psychologically with a cancer diagnosis. People who are immunocompromised in this pandemic, they can't leave the house and meet their support groups in person, and cancer support community national affiliates have moved all of their counseling and support group services online so anyone affected by cancer can get psychosupportive help safely. The Cancer Support Community was founded in 1982 in Los Angeles. Gilda Radner from Saturday Night Live joined Cancer Support Community when she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and she felt so good about her experience with CSC that her family and estate established Gilda's Clubs, which are now part of the Cancer Support Community Network. There are 175 cancer support affiliates all over the world now. So if you're listening to Go Fact Yourself right now and you're someone affected by cancer, there's an affiliate near you providing a supportive community environment, and there is a helpline to call when you need to talk to someone. It's a really fun show, and you can get more of me, Jake Heath Van Stratton, on April 1st, April Fool's Day, on Comedy on Purpose. So join us on April 1st. Just go to cancersupportla.org. That's www.cancersupportla.org to register to be a part of the Funny on Purpose Zoom audience. Or you can go to @cancersupportla on Facebook and make a date to live stream the event. So again, please check out this great show for a great cause. And if you're so moved, please consider making a contribution. It really helps, and they do great work. I'm very happy to have been asked to host these Cancer Support LA Funny on Purpose game shows for the last several months. Thanks so much, and thank you, Cancer Support LA.
I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like,
why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleek?
Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about butts.
No, we don't. Nope.
Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too. Butts, 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 butts.
No. Baby, you change your mind.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself, where our score is Jason Benetti with 9 points and Liz Feldman with 1 point. Once again, here's Jake Heath Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. All right, Liz, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about the current LA Dodgers, NBC sitcoms of the 1980s, and famous lesbians. Let's find out more about each of those. Jason is praying for famous lesbians to be the category.
It's a trap, say the Braves.
Exactly. But let's start by telling us why you chose the current LA Dodgers as one of your topics.
In this pandemic, I have found that watching the Dodgers is one of the only solves for my soul. Mm. I'm actually, like the Dodgers, born and raised in Brooklyn.
Mm. Ah!
So I did grow up a Mets fan, but about maybe 10 years ago, I asked permission from my dad if I could become a Dodgers fan.
Oh.
And he gave me his blessing.
Oh, nice.
He thinks it's important to be a fan of the team, you know, where you live.
Yeah.
And so my wife, Rachel, and I have become really, you know, enthusiastic Dodgers fans. And I'm so honestly grateful that they, you know, that they were able to find a way to play even some version of a season this year.
Very nice. All right. You also said, Liz, that you know a lot about NBC sitcoms of the 1980s.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm a big TV nerd. It's the business I went into. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in the 80s, for the young kids listening at home, you know, we only had four or five channels. Thursday nights, especially on NBC, were the gold standard of sitcoms, and you know it's what made me the woman I am.
Okay, well, speaking of making you the woman you are, your final
great segue.
Yes, your final topic was famous lesbians.
You know, listen, I'm a proud gay woman, and I thought, well, what can I bring on the show that perhaps hasn't been represented before? Mm-hmm. Representation matters.
Absolutely.
So I picked famous lesbians because I think that this is a topic I might be able to crush in.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So to summarize, Liz, you said you know a lot about the current LA Dodgers, NBC sitcoms of the 1980s, and famous lesbians. Today we're going to quiz you about NBC sitcoms of the 1980s.
Okay, I'll take
You'll
it.
Take
I'll
it.
Take it.
So, Liz, do you have a favorite sitcom of that era?
I do. It's Family Ties.
Yeah. What is it about Family Ties that you love so much?
Well, I'm a huge Michael J. Fox fan, in so far that I almost picked him as one of my topics of expertise. It was a very progressive show. It was about, you know, a pretty liberal family who had this sort of one conservative member, and I think I probably experienced the inverse of that in that, like, as being a gay kid, I was the one sort of outlier in my family, and I think that's probably in retrospect why I related to his character.
That's very insightful.
Interesting.
Well, just ahead, Liz, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in your topic to test your mastery in the subject with
I'm
our
so
expert
excited.
Level question. Oh, good. Before that, to let you show your love, here are five trivia questions about your topic, each worth 1 point. If you want it, you're allowed a hint for any two of the five questions.
Okay.
Now, Jason, do listen closely, because if Liz answers incorrectly, you can steal. Jason, how much do you know about NBC sitcoms of the 1980s?
Well, I was born in 1983, so you tell me.
Okay. Liz, let's see if you let him get a chance to show how young and precious he is.
Okay.
All right, here's question number one. Liz, despite airing on Saturday nights at 9 p.m., and despite the lead characters being four women over age 50, what NBC sitcom ended the 1980s by being one of the decade's top-rated shows?
That would be Golden Girls.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. The Golden Girls for a point. Fun fact, we did an entire segment on the Golden Girls with guest Cristela Alonso on episode 4 of Go Fact Yourself.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
It was a really fun segment.
I didn't know that show was on Saturday nights
at
9 p.m.
Yeah.
That's a crazy
Saturday
time
Saturday nights
slot.
At 9, and it still managed to be huge ratings. In fact, I believe 1 year it was the number one show.
I think that's correct.
Wow.
All right, question number two. I have a feeling you're going to get this based on our chat moments ago. NBC became a sitcom powerhouse in the 1980s thanks largely to the decision in 1984 to lead off one night of programming with The Cosby Show, Family Ties, and Cheers. What night of the week was it?
That would be Thursday night.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct.
Must-see NBC. TV.
Yes, that's right. The fun fact is that NBC's lineup on this night was later marketed as must-see TV. Another fun fact, we did an entire segment on Cheers with guest Josh Gondelman on episode 69 of Go Fact Yourself.
I listened to that one. I really enjoyed it.
And
thank you so much.
When you
Liz.
Brought on George Wendt, I squealed.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, like
that's exactly
what
we're going for.
So did I. I squealed.
All right, you're 2 for 2. Here's question number 3, Liz. From 1985 to 1990, the NBC sitcom 227 featured an impressive cast of actors, including eventual Emmy winners Regina King and Paul Winfield. But who is the only cast member of 227 to win an Emmy for her role on 227?
I believe that would be Jacquet Haré.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct for the point. Fun fact, we did an entire segment on 227. No, we did not. We have not yet. By the way, Jack A won that Emmy in 1987, beating out fellow NBC sitcom stars Estelle Getty, Justine Bateman, and Rhea Perlman. Getty and Perlman did win in other years for their roles. You did not need the hint, but Helen, I know you've been practicing all week.
Aww.
If you had needed that hint, what would that hint have been?
Ooh, Mary. I don't know if I did it right.
Can I try one?
Yes, Liz, let's hear your take.
Ooh, Mary.
No, yeah. Oh, my God.
There it was.
Liz Feldman, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Yeah, Liz, you out-oo-married me.
I'm
you
sorry, Helen.
You out-oo-married, indeed. Jason, do you want to give it a go?
I do not. Thank you for asking.
Here's question number four for Liz Feldman. You still have your two hints available as you are 3-for-3. Liz, there were lots of memorable NBC sitcoms in the 1980s with names of a main character in the title, like Dear John, Valerie, Seinfeld, and Alf. And there were some that maybe weren't so memorable, like Jennifer Slept Here, Sister Kate, A Family for Joe, Bobby's Turn, and Anne Jillian. In fact, one of those five shows I just mentioned was not a real sitcom. Which one?
Can I have a clue, please?
Helen, how about that first hint?
A Family for Joe was an NBC sitcom of the 1980s.
That's very helpful. I'm going to go with Bobby's Turn.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. We made that one up. Fun fact, A Family for Joe was about orphaned children played by Juliette Lewis and Ben Savage, who, in order to avoid being sent to foster care, invited a homeless man played by Robert Mitchum to pretend to be their grandfather.
Wow.
You know, that classic sitcom premise. It only lasted 9 episodes.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, strange.
What you mean is it actually lasted 9 episodes.
They had nothing else ready to replace it. All right, Liz, you have a chance to go 5-for-5 if you can get this question correct. A Different World was a successful sitcom spinoff with a successful theme song, beginning with the line, I know my parents love me. In the 6 seasons of the show, 3 different artists sang the opening theme. Name 2 of them.
Wow.
You do have that second hint available.
I'm going
like to
need that second
it.
Hint.
Helen, how about that second hint?
If you combined how 2 of them are sometimes referred to, you'd get the Queen of Motown Philly.
The Queen of Motown Philly. I'm going to go with Boys to Men.
And?
And, God, you said Queen as a thing, so maybe it isn't Queen Latifah.
The Queen.
The Queen.
The Queen.
The Queen of, in fact.
The Queen of. I mean, is it possible that it would be the Queen of Soul, who is Aretha Franklin? Would she have really? I'm going to go for it. Aretha Franklin and Boys to Men.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Liz Feldman is 5-for-5. Excellent use of the clue.
Thank you.
The first season was sung by Phoebe Snow. Aretha Franklin did seasons 2-5. Boys to Men did season 6.
Amazing.
Fun fact, that theme song was co-written by Dawn Lewis, who played Lisa Bonet's roommate on the show. The producers didn't want her to sing it because then it would seem like the show was about her instead of Lisa Bonet, not knowing that Lisa Bonet would leave the show after only one season. Liz, you did very, very well in that quiz, but now here's your expert level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. Liz, a big part of NBC's sitcom lineup in the 1980s was Night Court, which always featured 2 bailiffs, a man and a woman. The man was played by Richard Mall as Bull. But for a while, the female bailiff role seemed to be cursed as 2 different performers in that role tragically died during the run of the show. Finally, an actor stepped in and broke that curse, playing bailiff Roz Russell for the last 5 seasons of the show. And when the show ended, she immediately leapt to another NBC sitcom that began in the 1980s for the last 2 years of its run. So, for up to 3 points, Liz, name one of the 2 women who sadly died while playing a bailiff on Night Court. Who was the actor who played Roz the bailiff, and what was the show she joined after Night Court ended?
Okay, so the first one was one of the 2 actresses who tragically passed.
Yes.
I don't know. I have no idea. Yeah.
Do you want to take a guess then at the actor who played Roz?
I know her name. It's right here. I can picture her face. She's hilarious. Gosh, I want to say Warfield.
Okay.
Yes.
And then what was the show that she joined after Night Court ended?
Would it have been Harry's? It would have been that spinoff, maybe. Harry, or was that a prequel to Night Court? Harry something.
Harry something.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Helen is taking note of your answers, Liz. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have today?
She is a comedian and actor who has been entertaining audiences for over 4 decades, including playing Roz on Night Court. It's Marsha Warfield.
Yes!
Marsha Warfield!
Wow! It's so cool to meet you.
Likewise.
Wow. God,
thank you so,
so
much
funny.
For joining us, Marsha. I was a huge fan of Night Court. I always loved you on that show. It means a lot to me that you joined us as well from a personal level as
you
well.
You look so beautiful and elegant.
Thank you. It's just my Sunday slop around.
Well, that's a slop around.
I mean,
your Sunday best must be something.
Yeah.
Marsha, you understand that you live in Las Vegas now. That's where you're joining us from.
Yeah, I've been here since 2001.
Wow.
Oh, wow. But you were originally from Chicago.
I am from Chicago. Yep.
Were you a Sox fan?
No, I was not. I lived on the South Side, and as a child would take the L all the way from the South Side to the North Side to watch the Cubs.
Oh,
Marsha, I love your work so much. I was so hoping you were saying you were a Sox fan.
Well, Billy Williams didn't play for the Sox.
That's true.
Well, it's interesting, Marsha. You actually qualify as an expert, not just in this topic, but in another topic of Liz's, because you, in fact, are a famous lesbian.
Famous lesbian, yay!
Marsha, if I could just nerd out for a moment, I can't
Please.
Tell you, like, first of all, you just brought me so much joy as a young person watching TV. You know, it inspired me to become a TV person. But I also, as another far less famous lesbian, I just want to say I love and respect you, and I stand in your shadow.
Well, thank you, but I just came out in my 60s. I was not out at that time, and it was a big deal, but it was very late, and I admire all the younger women who have spoken up and spoken out and made strides and made it possible for those of us who were stuck in the closet with the glass door for most of our lives.
Well, you know what? It's never too late to be exactly who you are. And it feels really good to be, you know, your authentic self. I know that feeling really well. And I just congratulate you on being fully you.
Well, if you don't mind talking about it a little more, you mentioned that you did not come out until your 60s, and you're staying in the closet had something to do with your mom's wish.
And coming up when I did, you came out in stages because awareness came in stages. Mm. There were no famous lesbians when I was coming up. So. Mm. When I came out to my mother, she said, well, I know, which always ticks me off when people say, well, I knew, why the hell did you keep me in the closet? But anyway, she said she knew, and she just said, well, live your life, but please don't come out while I'm alive.
Mm. Wow.
And that's part of why you waited?
Yes, but unfortunately, she passed away very young. And still after that, it took a while.
Weren't ready, yeah.
Well, I was retired. So yeah. There was no public announcement necessary or people thought I died with her. So, no, I still get that. You ain't dead yet? No, I'm not dead yet. At least I wasn't before you asked that question.
Let's talk about some of your work. Your early work is especially interesting to me. Is it right that your first TV credit ever was with a comedy legend?
I got to do extra work on shows like The Mac Davis Show and Jim Neighbor's Show. Of course, I did The Merv Griffin Show and things like that. But I also had my big break on the Richard Pryor Show.
Wow.
Wow.
That's so cool.
What did you learn from working with Richard Pryor?
Don't be Richard Pryor.
So you don't recommend setting your hair on fire?
Richard was a wonderful person. He taught so much just as far as how to be funny, how to turn it on. But he was a very shy, quiet man.
Well, it's interesting because the show, that you did a lot of sketches on the show, and he didn't really like to rehearse, did he?
No, he did not. It's the one that's still playing all over the internet with he and I eating and seducing each other with our food. We never rehearsed. Mm-hmm. I was a rookie. I had never done television. I had never thought I'd be in a feature role at that time. And to be the first scene up, when the cameras come up, I'm sitting there dolled up and dressed up, and I've got to lead the straight woman. I got to you know, start the thing and seduce Richard Pryor across the room. And so it was nerve-wracking, but we pulled it off in one take and one pickup. So
wow. It's a great clip. I really recommend people look that up. I know you can find it on Marsha's website at marshawarfield.com. And now it's funny enough, and then when you watch it knowing that there wasn't rehearsal behind it, it's even more astounding. Let's talk about Night Court. We kind of referred to this curse about these the women in the bailiff role previously who had tragically died while they're doing the show. Did that creep you out a lot? Were you worried about that?
Well, I told a non-PC joke at the time when people would ask me how I felt about taking over a role after the first two bailiffs passed away. I said, to tell you the truth, I'd have killed a couple of more white women to get the job. I had been a fan of Selma Diamond.
Yeah, she was so wonderful in so many different roles. Were you a fan of Night Court before you joined the show?
I was a fan of Night Court, but I had also done a pilot with Flo Hallop the season before and gotten to know her. And she was, Flo had this way of, if you told her a joke, she would laugh in your face. Just go, right in your face. And it was the most wonderful, terrifying thing ever happened to you. But she was a very nice lady, and I was sorry to about her passing so soon after I met her.
So Night Court was already a hit and must have been sort of a well-oiled machine when you joined the show. How did they welcome you and bring you in to feel comfortable?
Well, that was interesting because I had no real acting experience other than the little limited sketch work I had done here and there. And I had taken a class. I went to take a class once I got the gig. And I was the second class. The first class, they said, get a book. And I got the book. They said, read the first chapter before you come back for the second class. So I read the thing and opened it up and said, the key to acting is to keep it simple. So I closed the book and I went to work. And I showed up and never went to another acting class.
Wow. Back in the day, I actually went to go to one of the live tapings, and I think I was the last person in line before they had to cut it off. Like I think like John Larroquette's friends had actually shown up, so they needed those seats. But the vibe, even just in the line, I mean, it felt like a party. People were excited as if they were going to a club. What was the vibe for those live tapings for you as an actor?
By the time we got to do the retaped all day. Mm-hmm. Taped all day and then did the 7 o'clock tape. I mean, by the time we did that, usually the audience energized us. It was the vibe of the audience that brought us up, you know, and the whole atmosphere around Night Court was like a family. It was a lot of babies born at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, once you get into the fifth year of a season, people start, you know, getting comfortable and taking out mortgages and stuff like that. So to this day, there are grown-up adults that I met on that show as little children.
Wow. Oh, that's very sweet. You'd mentioned earlier that you'd retired for almost 20 years. Why did you retire from comedy and why did you come back to start performing again?
I retired because of family obligations and I was needed more for that than to be a performer. And then when the opportunity came up, I was no longer as needed around the house. And I could start doing the stand-up again and testing the waters and see if I could still play in the big league, so to speak.
Well, you definitely are playing in the big leagues, and until the pandemic happened, of course, you were doing regular shows in Vegas. You were a regular headliner.
Yeah, that was at the, I don't even know what the hell the name of the
club. The L.A. Comedy Club, I think.
The L.A. Comedy Club. And I was working there, but now that the pandemic, you know, even with them reopening, I'm still not comfortable.
Sure. Well, hopefully you'll be able to be back there. I know audiences will certainly appreciate that. Well, let's get to the reason that we brought you here as far as our game is concerned. You heard the questions that we asked of Liz. First, we wanted to know, on Night Court, who were one of the two women who sadly passed while playing a bailiff on Night Court? Helen, what did Liz say?
Liz had no answer for that one.
No answer. Yeah. Tell us again, who were those wonderful ladies, Marsha Warfield?
Selma Diamond and Flo Hallop.
And Flo Hallop, yes. I'm sorry, no point there for it, Liz. But we wanted to know also, who was the actor who played Roz the Bailiff? Helen, what did Liz say?
Liz said Warfield.
And Ms. Warfield?
I think you got to give it to her.
I think so as well. That's a point for Liz. Good job. And then finally, we wanted to know, what was the show that she joined after Night Court ended. Helen, what did Liz say?
Liz said Harry's something.
And Marshall Warfield?
I was on Empty Nest.
I was, oh my God, I swear I was going to say that, but then Empty Nest was part of what you were saying earlier, and I thought, why would they reference it twice? Oh no, I knew it.
Harry went on to do Dave's World.
Dave's World.
And John went on to do the John Larroquette Show.
There you go. It's so great that so many of you had so much success right after that, too. All right. So no point on that one. Marsha, before we let you go, Liz, is there anything else that you'd like to ask or say to Marsha Warfield while we have her here?
I don't know. It's so nice to meet you. And I hope it's okay for me to say this, but I'm so proud of you.
Oh, thank you so much. And I just want to say that my next project is going to be a Liz Feldman show.
Oh, really? Yes. Breaking news for everyone on the show, including Liz Feldman.
No, listen, I'm there. Excellent. Marsha's burrowing in, and I like it.
Awesome. Well, Marsha, if people want to find out more about you or your work, where can they go?
Anything on the internet that has a whatever is Marsha Warfield. What it is, Marsha Warfield. Facebook, Marsha Warfield. Instagram, Twitter, Cameo, everything. You can find me at my name.
Excellent. Well, we're awesome. So glad that we found you for this show. Thank you so much for joining us. Marsha Warfield, everybody.
What a pleasure. So nice to meet you.
Likewise.
All right. Helen, what is our score as we go into the final round?
At the end of that round, Jason Benetti has 9 points and Liz Feldman has 7 points.
All right, Liz, you caught up quite well. Let's see what happens now, because now it is time for our final round we call Fast Facts. I'll read 10 statements and each contestant will answer with true or false. I'll start with Jason and alternate between each guest. Each correct answer is worth 1 point. Again, the answer to each statement is true or false. Here we begin. Jason, Ben & Jerry's is a popular brand of hot dogs.
False.
Correct.
Liz, Ben & Jerry's is a popular brand of ice cream.
True.
Correct.
Jason, Ben & Jerry's has made a flavor called chocolate comfort.
True.
Correct.
Liz, Ben & Jerry's has made a flavor called chocolate therapy.
True.
Correct.
Jason, Ben & Jerry's has made a flavor called chocolate pleasure.
False.
Correct.
Liz, Ben & Jerry's has made a flavor called Caramel Sutra.
True.
Correct.
Jason, Ben & Jerry's has made a flavor called Coffee Coffee Yum Yum.
True.
Incorrect.
Liz, Ben & Jerry's has made a flavor called Coffee Coffee Buzz Buzz Buzz.
True.
Correct.
Jason, Ben & Jerry's has made a flavor in honor of Stephen Colbert.
False.
Incorrect.
Liz, Ben & Jerry's has made a flavor in honor of Jimmy Fallon.
False.
Incorrect.
And finally, Jason, Jimmy Fallon's flavor is vanilla.
False.
Correct.
We're not going to count that last one. Let's thank again Liz Feldman and Jason Benetti as Helen tabulates the final score. Helen, are you ready to announce the winner on today's episode?
Oh, it's such a tight one, Jakey. At the end of the game, Jason Benetti has 12 points and Liz Feldman has 11 points.
Oh, my goodness. Man. What a great match. Congratulations. Very high scoring game. Jason, you are the facting champion on Go Fact Yourself. What will you do with your championship?
I feel like I want to share it with Liz. I had such fun competing against Liz. It was close. It was very close and great fun. So thank you for having me.
Oh, what a lovely sport you are. Well, that just leaves us the opportunity for everyone to promote anything that they would like. Jason, if people want to find you or your work, what do you have going on? Where can people find you?
Yeah, I'll be doing football games from my living room for the next couple of months. you can find me on Twitter at Jason Benetti.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure. Liz Feldman, wonderful to see you again. Where can people find you and your work?
Great to see you. And I just want to say congrats, Jason. That was well won. And I'm going to be beating myself up about Empty Nest for at least the next week. You can watch my show Dead to Me on Netflix. The first two seasons are streaming and available to you now. And you can find me at the Liz Feldman on Instagram and Twitter.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being here. And thanks to both of you for being such gracious competitors. Ladies and gentlemen, my hosting partner is Helen. She is Hong. She is, in fact, Helen Hong. Woo! What do you have going on, Helen?
You can watch the sitcom that I'm on, The Unicorn, on Netflix now or on CBS All Access. I'm also on a sci-fi series, animated series called The Magical Girl Friendship Squad, airing Saturdays at midnight on sci-fi. And you can follow me at Funny Helen Hong, because some other girl named Helen Hong has all my handles.
Mm. Boo. But Helen Hong, yay!
She's not funny. The other Helen Hong is not funny.
No way she's as funny as this Helen.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, and me. You can find me on Twitter at @J_Keith, on Instagram at jkeith.net, all spelled out. That just leaves me to thank Jason Minetti, Liz Feldman, Michael Hitchcock, Marshall Warfield. Hey, everybody, please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, all at GoFactorPod, and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can also update our wiki at gofactorwiki.fandom.com and buy our T-shaped shirt at maxfunstore.com. I'm J. Keith Van Stratton. Good night. Like what you hear? Come see us live someday. It's free. Go to gofactorpod.com for our schedule and tickets. And give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps. Do it like Firestorm 3 did. He, she, or they said for their review title, "It's amazing." And for the review itself, "It's amazing." Thanks, Firestorm 3. Amazing review. Helen?
Go Fact Yourself is a panel quiz program devised by Jim Newman and J. Keith Van Stratton and comes to you via transcription from various homes across the country. Questions on Go Fact Yourself were compiled by the Trivia Industrial Complex. It is produced in collaboration with Maximum Fun. Go Fact Yourself's theme song and incidental music were written and performed by Jonathan Green. Maximum Fun's senior producer is Laura Swisher. Associate producer and editor and generally swell awesome dude is Julian Burrell. Special thanks to Sherry Kelton, Erica Goldish, Nina Kim, Phyllis Katz, Jim Colucci, Brandon J. Carr, Clint Tauscher, Mike Avellanos, Adam Nediff, Dave Bianchi, Eric Tran, and Christine Vallada. I've been Helen Hong.
Let's go rewatch Night Court.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.